When I first started working in clinical, everything was new to me. And when something's new, it can be scary. I mean, this is why so many people are afraid of change. It's the unknown, and quite frankly, that can be an uncomfortable feeling. Well, I had screened my patients and went upstairs and saw that one of my patients had so many episodes of loose stool and diarrhea. I immediately thought, they're sick. They have the flu. That has to be it. There's a terrible bug going around. After going through their medications, I came across one I hadn't seen before. The patient happened to have liver disease and elevated ammonia levels. This particular medication was doing what it was supposed to be doing. It's supposed to cause frequent bowel movements and diarrhea. And it also happens to be used to help patients with chronic constipation. Diarrhea is a side effect for many medications. But there are also medications where the goal is to stimulate bowel movements. I'm Jana Nickel, and this is the RD Exam Made Easy podcast. Well, hey there. This episode was requested by a few listeners who've expressed concerns about medications showing up on the exam. So I'm going to break down some common medications and the impact it has, particularly for us as dietitians. It's so important to emphasize this because throughout my career, I've seen some dietitian notes that look less like nutrition notes and more like physician documentation. While it's fabulous to have a good and thorough understanding of someone's medical condition, because we're part of the team and we need to help patients in the best way possible. But our notes are nutrition documentation and they should be focused on nutrition. The same is true for other professions. Like, for example, if I had a patient who was having a hard time swallowing and was seen by a speech therapist, I expect and hope to see recommendations regarding what type of texture the foods need to be for that patient and what's safe for them. That's the purpose and the focus of their note. Our notes as dietitians is nutrition focused. So I want to do a quick recap of the nutrition care process. Remember, the nutrition care process, or NCP, standardizes the charting dietitians do using the ADIME format. ADIME stands for Assessment, Diagnosis, Intervention, Monitoring, and Evaluation. And again, diagnosis is the nutrition diagnosis, not the medical diagnosis. I addressed this in a previous episode, so if you need a recap on nutrition diagnosis versus medical diagnosis, be sure to check out episode 11. So like I said, our notes need to be nutrition focused. That also includes medications. Many medications have side effects, and let's be honest, there's a ton of medications out there. Most of the medications we document in the medical record are medications that impact either the patient's nutrition or the interventions we're providing. The medication someone takes can also affect their labs, especially the labs that are nutritionally pertinent. I'm going to focus on some common medications in this episode, but keep in mind there are many, and I'm not going to be able to mention all of those because we just don't have time for that. And I also want to say the purpose of this episode is to share information on medications that can help you with the RD exam. The information is not to be taken as medical advice. It's for educational and informational purposes only. So if you have questions about medications for your own personal use, please make sure to always reach out to a physician for guidance. And I want to take that a little further. When you're a dietitian, keep asking questions, just like the listeners of this podcast did by asking me to review medications for the exam. As professionals, you need to make sure you're always asking questions. Remember what your role is as a dietitian. You need to continue to help patients, advocate for them, and always keep their best interest in mind. It's not only your role as a dietitian, it's the role of all healthcare providers who care for that patient. The patient should be in the middle and should be surrounded by loving healthcare providers who have that patient's best interest at heart. So I want to go over some medications we often deal with as dietitians. Like I already mentioned, I can't go over every single medication because my goal is to be informative while also being concise and practical. I also asked an intern what medications they've seen the most during their clinical rotation, especially medications that were new to them, and also what they felt would be most helpful for this episode. So I made sure I included that list to go over with you, just so that it's as thorough as possible. And one more thing, dietitians aren't pharmacists. Pharmacists have a very important role. Their expertise is working with medications. They're experts when it comes to medications. And as a dietitian, I reach out to pharmacists all the time. I'm so thankful for them. In fact, one of my favorite memories is when I was a nutrition support specialist, I educated the pharmacists on nutrition, particularly on estimated needs. Not only was it fun because I loved the team of pharmacists I worked with, it was also great because we collaborated and taught each other. Super valuable. And honestly, this is how I learned and grew so much as a dietitian. And looking back, I learned so much in quite a short period of time. Mainly because I asked so many questions and I would always reach out to other people on the team for guidance and for information when I wasn't clear. And having that opportunity to teach really helped. I've always said teaching is the best way to learn. Okay, so I want to circle back to the opening case study where I mentioned this patient had frequent bowel movements and diarrhea. At first, like I said, I thought they were sick with the flu until I came across a medication. That medication was lactulose. Now, I was new and was hyper-focused on the diet order and what type of nutrition they were getting, so I kind of had tunnel vision at that point. This patient wasn't sick, at least not with the flu. They had diarrhea because of the lactulose they were getting. Now, whenever someone has diarrhea, you have to think about nutrition being lost in the stool. Things like electrolytes and zinc are really important to pay attention to. And of course, the diet order is really important. It's just that at that point, that's all I could think about. And at that point in my career, we were bringing awareness that the hepatic diet is not an appropriate diet. The appropriate diet for people with liver disease, especially people who have ascites, is a low sodium diet. That's really the most appropriate diet for those patients. So let's move on to a medication. The medication that we're going to talk about next are steroids, corticosteroids. The purpose is to control inflammation. Corticosteroids can cause fluid and sodium retention, which can result in weight changes. They can also cause changes in fat distribution and cause fat deposits in the face. A common term for this is moon face. You'll also see this in patients who've had organ transplants. And one of the big side effects of steroids is that it affects metabolism by decreasing carbohydrate tolerance. What you'll typically see clinically is elevated blood sugars. This, of course, then affects their nutrition because the patients need to be mindful of the carbohydrates they eat. Steroids can also increase someone's appetite, which can lead to weight gain. Now, I don't know if you'll be asked about a specific medication on the exam, but I always like to give a tip just because I've taken the CNSC 3 times. And medications are part of the exam review because the exam is taken not only by dietitians, it's taken by pharmacists and doctors, nurses, really anyone on the healthcare team who wants to learn more about nutrition support. So what I do when I study medications is I pay attention to the nomenclature or to the name of the medication. Oftentimes, I can at least figure out what class of medication it is from the name. So with steroids, many of them end with "-one." For example, prednisone, hydrocortisone, dexamethasone. Now, there are some that are named differently, but this is a little tip that's helped me over the years, especially when you have a medication that ends with "-one." So during my time when I was working as a nutrition support dietitian, I worked in the neurological critical care unit. And when I was in that unit, I saw a lot of patients with brain injuries, brain aneurysms, and seizures. Patients were there for other reasons, but it was primarily a neurological critical care unit, so most of the patients in that unit had some issues involving the brain. Because I saw patients who had seizures, I saw many patients who were on Dilantin. Dilantin, or another name for it, is phenytoin, is an anti-seizure medication, and it also happens to be a medication that requires the patient to not eat or receive nutrition before and after each dose. So this, of course, has a big impact on nutrition. Let me give you a scenario. Let's say you have a patient in the ICU who's getting continuous tube feeding. The doctor orders phenytoin to be given 3 times a day. So one day is 24 hours. This means the patient would likely get the medication every 8 hours. The pharmacist calls you, the amazing dietitian, once the doctor places the order, and they need to let you know that the patient can't receive tube feeding for 2 hours before and after each dose. So you now have to change things up and do some calculations. This is how you could go about it. You're going to look to see your daily tube feeding volume. For example, if this patient is getting tube feeding with an hourly rate of 65 milliliters per hour, this would give a total volume of 1,560 milliliters in a 24-hour period. If the formula is a 1 cal per mil formula, which is a standard formula, it means the patient is getting 1,560 calories, because for every milliliter, they get 1 calorie. So the volume is the same as the calories. So that's how many calories you want the patient to continue to get. But now you have to increase the rate of the tube feeding, because the patient can't get the tube feeding over 24 hours. They need to get the tube feeding over 12 hours, because for each dose, the tube feeding needs to be held 2 hours before and 2 hours after each dose, which means for each dose, the feeds are held for 4 hours. If the patient gets 3 doses in a 24-hour period, 4 hours for each dose 3 times a day means a total of 12 hours. So for 12 hours in a 24-hour period, the patient needs to be NPO. That leaves only 12 hours in a day for the patient to receive nutrition. Now, going back to the amount the patient needs. Before they started on phenytoin, they were getting tube feeds with a rate of 65 milliliters per hour, or a total daily volume of 1,560 milliliters in a 24-hour period. So you're going to take the total volume and divide it by 12, because there's only 12 hours in a day that the patient can get nutrition. This will give you an hourly tube feeding rate of 130 milliliters per hour. So let's do this again. You need a total volume of 1,560 milliliters. You divide that volume by 12 because you only have 12 hours in a 24-hour period, which will give you 130. 130 milliliters per hour is what you need to run your tube feeding at when they're getting their tube feeding. So that means when it's held for the 4 hours for each dose, the patient still gets enough nutrition at the end of the day. So I hope this is helpful. This is just an example. Maybe they don't need it to be held that much, or maybe they can consolidate it. I'm just giving you an example of what you would do if the patient was put on a medication and you're told this is how long the tube feeds need to be held. So something to keep in mind. And if the patient is eating regular foods, you don't have to do any of these calculations. The patient would just time their meals before and after the dose and just make sure they don't eat close to taking their medication. So another medication that comes to mind is levothyroxine. Levothyroxine is for people who have thyroid disease, particularly hypothyroidism. There are several foods that can interfere with the absorption of levothyroxine. Due to some of the drug-nutrient interactions, it's sometimes easier to just avoid taking this medication with food. Now, moving on to a different medication, let's talk about diuretics. Diuretics are given to people to remove excess fluid. For example, patients with heart disease. You'll sometimes hear patients refer to a diuretic as a water pill. Diuretics can cause increased excretion of potassium, sodium, chloride, magnesium, and calcium. So these need to be monitored. Oftentimes, if someone needs a diuretic, they might also need a fluid restriction. So you need to make sure you pay attention to the diet order, and if you have any doubts, ask. I can't say that enough. You do much better patient care when you understand the patient and what's going on with them. On top of electrolytes being an issue, patients can have abdominal cramps, diarrhea, and constipation. And one of the big complaints is dry mouth. So let's put this all together. Diuretics help the body get rid of excess water. When you lose water, you also lose electrolytes. This is why fluid replacement drinks for athletes contain electrolytes. Diuretics can cause increased secretion of potassium, sodium, chloride, magnesium, and calcium. So they need to be monitored. A lot of the times, if someone needs a diuretic, they also might need a fluid restriction. So make sure you pay attention to the diet order and check to see if the patient needs a fluid restriction too. And if at any point you have doubts, ask and get clarification. I can't say it enough. So on top of electrolytes being an issue, patients can have abdominal cramps, diarrhea, and constipation. And one of the big complaints can be dry mouth, especially if they're on a fluid restriction. So let's put all of this together. Diuretics help the body get rid of excess water. When you lose water, you also lose electrolytes. Electrolyte replacement drinks don't just replace fluid, they also replace electrolytes, hence the name. When people lose fluid, common complaints are dehydration, such as dry mouth. And sometimes these patients will complain that they're really thirsty. They want to drink and they need to drink, but they're placed on a fluid restriction, so they can't. So there are some things that can help make them a little bit more comfortable. So moving on to antipsychotic medications. A lot of these medications affect appetite. Actually, in my experience, most of them do. Whenever I used to cover the psychiatric units, most of the patients were ordered a regular double portion or large diet because their medications make them extremely hungry. And almost every time I'd speak to the patients, they'd ask for more food or tell me they're hungry. I've had patients walk right up to me and say, "What did you bring me to eat? I'm hungry. Make me something." So it's something to keep in mind and to be aware of. Hunger is a real thing for these patients. Antidepressants can also affect people's appetite. Some people might lose weight while others can gain weight. In general, it's good to be aware that antidepressants can interfere with someone's appetite and their weight. So again, keeping these things in mind will really help you with your intervention and also with the type of education you provide your patients. Remember that everyone is unique and they're their own person and they need their own nutrition interventions. Having said that, there's always some commonalities, like I said, with the large double portion diets for patients who are on some of the medications in the psychiatric unit. Okay, so another class of medications that are commonly prescribed in patients are antibiotics. I think all of us at some point in time have been on an antibiotic, or at least know someone who's taken an antibiotic. Antibiotics in general can cause GI distress. You have to read the drug facts and the recommendations. Some medications require them to be taken with food, while others recommend you take them on an empty stomach. As a dietitian, if you're seeing someone who's taking an antibiotic and they have abdominal pain or cramping, maybe they have diarrhea, nausea, and vomiting, it could be because of the antibiotic. In these cases, you can't really stop the antibiotic because it's important for the patient to take the whole prescription. But you can work with the patient to find foods that'll work for them. I find foods like broth and soup or lighter foods really help improve the nutrition intake of these patients. So here's a list of some common antibiotics. Again, this is not a complete list. It's just some common medications that you might come across. Cipro, amoxicillin, ampicillin, erythromycin, penicillin, and tetracycline. Again, if you think about some of these as I'm saying them out loud, they all kind of end in a similar ending too. Penicillin, amoxicillin, ampicillin. So if you're studying, you can think about this as well when it comes to the tip I said earlier about paying attention to the name of the medication. A lot of the times you might not know the medication, but just knowing the name of it might help you figure out what it's for. And keep in mind that some of these antibiotics may require the patient to hold any dairy products while they're on the antibiotic. Okay, so moving on to a medication you might be familiar with are anticoagulants. A common anticoagulant is Coumadin or warfarin. The purpose of the anticoagulant is to prevent blood clots. The big drug-nutrient interaction for this medication is vitamin K. I've had a lot of patients tell me they can't have anything green to eat because they're on Coumadin. The recommendation is actually to follow a consistent vitamin K diet. The medication is typically dosed according to someone's diet. So the recommendation is not to make a ton of changes to the diet when taking Coumadin. If the patient typically eats a side salad every day, they can still do so as long as they were transparent with the doctor about what they eat. So not being able to eat any vitamin K is typically not the case. They just have to follow a consistent vitamin K diet. So let's talk a little about motility agents, which might be needed after a traumatic event. If there's signs the gut is slow or not moving, such as abdominal distension and decreased bowel movements, a promotility medication can be helpful. Some patients aren't able to move. And we know as dietitians that movement, walking, exercising, and being active can help move things along and is one of the recommendations when someone has constipation. So if this isn't an option and the patient can't walk around the hospital, then things are going to feel extra sluggish. Some common medications that can help move things along are erythromycin and Reglan. Remember I mentioned erythromycin when I was talking about antibiotics? Well, it's also a gut motility medication. It stimulates the gut to move, or it stimulates peristalsis. In my experience, these medications can be helpful for patients who need a little bit of help. So if you're seeing a patient and you think they need some promotility agent, you can reach out to the doctor and let them know what's going on. So let's move on to blood pressure medications. Controlling blood pressure is really important. Generally speaking, high blood pressure or hypertension is silent. A lot of people have no clue their blood pressure is high. they don't feel any different. So they don't feel they need to go to the doctor. And that can be very dangerous. Sometimes, in my experience, the first symptom of high blood pressure is actually kidney failure. And unfortunately, kidney failure can't be reversed. Once the nephrons die, which are the kidney cells, they can't come back to life. They don't regenerate. And it's not just hard on the kidneys, high blood pressure isn't good for the heart either. So let's go over a few medications that are used to control blood pressure. Atenolol and propranolol are some of the blood pressure medications. Side effects that have been reported are diarrhea, nausea, cramping, and vomiting. You might also see some medications such as ACE inhibitors, calcium channel blockers, and diuretics. Remember, diuretics remove excess fluid, which helps decrease the pressure on the blood vessels. I always feel like blood pressure and high cholesterol go hand in hand, at least to me. So let's talk a little about medications for high cholesterol. As we know very well, dietary and lifestyle changes are the best way to improve someone's cholesterol levels. But for some people, it's just not enough. Remember that the body makes cholesterol because we need cholesterol for many of our body functions. Cholesterol is used in cell membranes as well as hormones and bile. So we need some cholesterol for normal body functions. But the problem comes in when there's too much cholesterol, especially what we call bad cholesterol, because it can clog the arteries, which can lead to heart attacks. So let's go over the types of cholesterol quickly. LDLs and HDLs are the two most commonly checked cholesterols. The LDLs, or low-density lipoprotein, are considered the bad cholesterol because they can clog arteries. The HDL, or high-density lipoprotein, are good cholesterol because they remove cholesterol and take it back to the liver for it to be excreted. So it's protective. Some common medications that help lower cholesterol are statins, but keep in mind they can also cause diarrhea, stomach pain, and constipation, like so many of the other medications. Kind of feels like a trend, right? And remember, everyone responds differently. Let's talk a little about appetite stimulants, which are helpful for people who don't feel hungry. You'll see this sometimes in patients with cancer. Also, sometimes other medications or the inactivity from being in the hospital can decrease appetite. Because the more you move, the more hungry you get. And if you're sitting in a bed all day, it's hard to feel hungry. This is why getting people up and moving is so important, if of course it's safe to do so. So speaking of appetite stimulants, Marinol and Majestral acetate are two common medications. And here's something to keep in mind. A lot of medications interact with grapefruit. If you see it on the drug nutrient interactions, grapefruit is often listed. So in my experience, grapefruit is never on the menu in hospitals because of all these drug nutrient interactions. It just makes sense to keep it off the menu. Just like there's medications to help stimulate appetite, there are some medications that suppress appetite. You'll see this more often in people with ADD and ADHD. Ritalin and Adderall are two common medications that help with concentration. Now I'm going to move on to a medication that was approved for weight loss. Years ago, when I had just become a dietitian, a drug that was getting buzz in the news that I'd been hearing about was all of a sudden approved and available on the market. The drug is called orlistat, which blocks fat from being absorbed. I started seeing more and more patients who were prescribed the medication for weight loss. This was a really good lesson for me in that as a dietitian, I need to be aware of any new research and medications that are available to patients because people will ask, and you might even see patients on these medications. So being aware and having a baseline knowledge is really important. The next medication is something you'll see a lot in patients in the ICU. Propofol is a sedative, and it also provides calories because it's in a lipid emulsion. Propofol provides 1.1 calories per milliliter, and it looks like a white, milky substance. And let me tell you, the calories can really add up. I've had many patients who are getting more than 1,000 calories, sometimes 1,500 calories just from propofol, which can make feeding the patient a little challenging because so many calories are given in the form of a medication. When patients are receiving propofol, one of the things we check to monitor tolerance is the triglycerides. The goal is to make sure that the triglycerides stay within normal limits. And the last type of medication we commonly deal with as dietitians are medications that help promote bowel movements. Stool softeners such as Colace are often ordered as needed. So here's a quick note. If a medication is an as-needed medication, it's referred to as PRN in the medical record. So if you work in clinical or you hear someone use the medical term PRN, you now know what it means. It means as needed. Some other common medications are milk of magnesia, and if this doesn't work, a patient might need an enema. If you notice someone hasn't had a bowel movement, you might want to put in your nutrition intervention and recommendations to consider starting a bowel regimen. And make sure you escalate it to the physician so they can either place the order or at the very least it puts them on notice that the patient hasn't had a bowel movement. So as I'm talking to you, a story comes to mind when I was in the ICU. I saw a patient who was intubated and sedated. They were in the corner bed, and I remember it so clearly. It was back when we used to have paper charting, so the flow sheets for nursing were on the bedside table. After I gathered the information from the computer, the stuff you could see, like the labs and medications, I went to the unit to see the patient and noticed they hadn't had a bowel movement that day. I thought, okay, no problem. Some people don't poop every day. So I went to the previous day's flow sheet, and again, no bowel movement. Now, this patient was getting tube feeds, so they weren't NPO. If they weren't eating or they weren't getting tube feeds, I really wouldn't expect them to have a bowel movement. You kind of need to eat in order to have a bowel movement. But this patient was getting tube feeds, so things should be moving along. I ended up going back 7 days and no bowel movement had been documented. So I thought, well, maybe someone just forgot to document it because 7 days seemed like a really long time. I went to the nurses and asked them if the patient had a bowel movement when they had the patient on a previous day. Because remember, nurses don't always have the same patients assigned to them every single day. And everyone I asked said no. The patient hadn't had a bowel movement and the flow sheet was correct. Now, I love working in critical care for many reasons, but one of the big benefits of critical care is there's usually a doctor readily available in the unit to talk to. So that's what I did. I found the doctor, told them the patient hadn't had a bowel movement in 7 days, and the doctor right away said, well, we better take care of that, and ordered the patient milk of magnesia. The plan was to give the patient 24 hours to have a bowel movement. And if they didn't, well, then they need an enema most likely. Thankfully, the medication worked in this patient and they had a bowel movement. We covered a lot of information. I know you'll do a great job if you get any questions on medications. Remember, it's an entry-level exam. You need to know the basics. And before we go, here's my little words of wisdom for the day. When you're taking care of patients, you're an advocate for them, and you're so incredibly important. So speak up for your patients. and keep in mind that medications should always be reviewed. They don't all need to be addressed, but they should be reviewed. And look to see if the patient is having any side effects that are possibly related to the medication. As you learned in this episode, a lot of medications have GI side effects. And if the gut is impacted, so is nutrition. Side effects that affect the patient's taste and smell also have a big impact on eating. And this is always the golden rule. If you have a question and you're not so sure, look it up. Be curious, ask questions. Never stop asking questions. You got this. Keep doing you. Keep studying, and remember, your mindset in all of this is huge. The words you tell yourself really do matter. Stay positive, stay focused, and remember to stay on top of your study game. There's no limits to achieving the success you so deeply desire. Until next time. If you enjoyed this episode, please hit subscribe and leave a review. I'd love it if you could share this episode with other RDs to be. And hey, let's be friends. You can find me on Instagram at JanaNicholRD. Take care of yourself. And remember, it's no mistake you made it this far. You'll get through this exam and you'll make a difference in the lives you touch. Thank you so much for listening. See you next time on the RD Exam Made Easy podcast. Bye for now.